The last ship to bring slaves to America arrived in Alabama's Mobile Bay in 1860, carrying in its hull more than 100 men, women, and children who had been kidnapped from their African villages and sold into slavery. The slavers hid the evidence of their operation by burning and sinking the boat in the Mobile River Delta. For over 150 years, the ship remained a mystery, a myth, until an Alabama reporter discovered what could breathe new life to an Alabama community. This is the mystery of the Clotilda. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. In 1808, the United States ruled that the slave trade was over in America. The law of the land stated that violators would be fined $800 for buying illegally imported slaves, and anywhere from $20,000 in fines to imprisonment, even death, for equipping a slave ship. But slavery continued. The increasing demand for cotton and the slave labor needed for wealthy plantation owners to continue to profit from their land meant the demand for slaves increased. Southern resentment of federal control of their business increased with every year, and one Southerner took his frustration and turned it into a game of illegal slave trading. The last known ship to bring slaves to America was called the Clotilda. On Sunday, July 8, 1860, the ship sailed into Alabama's Mobile Bay with more than 100 African men, women, and children between the ages of 5 and 23 on board. These souls, considered cargo, property of wealthy plantation owner Timothy Mayer, who had made a bet that he could illegally bring Africans to Alabama for the slave trade and never be caught. Under the cover of darkness, the captain of the Clotilda transferred the men, women, and children onto a steamer. He then burned the ship to hide evidence of the illegal operation. The crew of the Clotilda were ordered to board a steamer, then sent to Montgomery. The captain, well, he ran, and no one was ever to speak of what happened. There was a bond between the captives who had been forced to board the Clotilda in their homeland and forced to endure the journey to America. These strangers endured the horror of being hunted and captured and then faced a perilous journey across the ocean. Once they arrived on land in Alabama, they were enslaved and never able to return home. Those on board the Clotilda were the last of what's estimated to be 389,000 Africans delivered into bondage on the American mainland between the early 1600s to 1860. What makes the souls who sailed on the Clotilda unique is that we know their story. We know how they were captured and enslaved, and we know the story of the ship that brought them to America. A ship that was once lost, considered to be a myth. After all, the man who played a game, placed a bet on the lives of more than 100 African souls, had gotten away with it. In the years following the Civil War, the men and women who had come to America on that ship and became free people of color after the war were left to struggle, always dreaming of home. And as they shared their stories of how they came to America, people doubted them, said they were telling tall tales. There was no proof of the Clotilda story, no boats, no wreckage site. Until 2018, when evidence of a crime that had been hidden beneath the murky waters in the Mobile River for over 150 years was finally discovered. Times revealed the truth of the Clotilda. Timothy Mayer came to Mobile, Alabama in 1836. He immediately got a job as a mate on a riverboat. Within a few years, he built several of his own steamers, and he and his brothers benefited from the booming economy in South Alabama. They bought land and thrived in the Mobile River Delta. In fact, their descendants are still some of the largest landholders in the area. Captain Mayer was a respected businessman and navigational pioneer of the Alabama River. In 1847, he built the Republic, the largest paddle wheel steamboat on the Gulf Coast. He and his brother also operated their own sawmill, one of the largest in the South. Cotton and timber led to Captain Mayer's success. He was said to have transported over 500,000 bales of cotton into the port of Mobile. His larger enterprise involved cargo and the timber trade, with a shipping business moving cargo from Mobile to Montgomery. And cotton? Well, cotton had changed everything for Alabama and the South. Cotton was king. By the late 1850s, Mobile was exporting over 500,000 tons of cotton. It was the basis and fuel of the entire economy of the South. The demand for slaves to work cotton plantations was constant. Whether it was cockiness or an answer to the demand for slaves in the South, we'll never know. All we know for sure is Timothy Mayer spoke with a group of rich men from up north and made a risky bet. He bragged that he could bypass the law that banned the importing of slaves, bet them that he could pull off an illegal run to Africa, buy cheaper slaves than in America, and he could do it within 2 years. Mayer knew that West African tribes had been at war, and the King of Dahomey was offering to sell Africans for as little as $50 a head. Mayer made a game out of importing slaves. He searched for a ship that would suit his mission. He found the Clotilda, a two-masted schooner that was light and fast. In fact, it was faster than most of the ships of its time and had enough room to transport more than 100 people in its hull. Mayer bought the Clotilda for $35,000 and hired Captain William Foster to head up the mission. Foster sailed for the Kingdom of Dahomey, known today as Benin, on March 4, 1860. The captain made sure that all of the supplies needed for the voyage, including food for his soon-to-be captives, were hidden on board, lest any number of military forces inspect the cargo along the way. The Clotilda arrived in Africa on May 15, 1860. Captain Foster purchased over 100 slaves, paying $9,000 owed in gold. After selecting 110 men, women, and children from what's known as a barracon, a prison where captives were held before being sent across the Atlantic, Captain Foster sailed for Alabama. The conditions on board the Clotilda were deplorable, to say the least. A majority of the captives were made to board the ship and make the transatlantic journey completely naked. None of them were allowed to leave the hull of the ship for the first 13 days at sea. The smells alone must have been overwhelming for those captives. There was no escaping it. Mayer and Foster had worked out a plan for the Clotilda to arrive in port in Mobile, unload the slaves, and then sail on to Mexico, where they were going to make sure the ship was cleaned and then make the necessary changes to alter the ship, sell it back to America, and continue to use it so no investment would be lost. When the Clotilda sailed into Mobile Bay on Sunday, July 8th of 1860, those plans changed. Captain Foster knew that federal authorities had become aware of the bet. Foster feared he would be killed by federal forces who wanted to make an example of him and of Mayer. Foster sailed into Mobile Bay under the cover of darkness, sent word to Mayer that his cargo had arrived, transferred the cargo to a steamer, then burned and sank the Clotilda on the banks of the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and then disappeared. As to the men, women, and children, a majority remained in Mobile, with about 25 young people being sold to slave brokers upriver and sold to the highest bidder. 32 became property of Timothy Mayer. 8 became the property of his brother James. 20 were sent to a plantation in Clark County, Alabama, that was owned by the Mayers. 5 were given to William Foster as payment for the trip. And the remaining men, women, and children were bought by plantation owner Thomas Buford. Mayer and Foster did face charges for what they had done. Mayer was charged with violating the slave importation law, but there wasn't enough evidence to directly link him or his brothers to the Clotilda. And the Clotilda itself was gone. When federal authorities tried to find the Africans on the plantations the brothers owned, the operators hid them in swamps and canebrakes around the plantation. Once the Civil War began in 1861, Captain Mayer and his illegal operation became insignificant. The case was dropped. The Africans spent the next 5 years as slaves. They had been forced to come to America in 1860, just 1 year before the Civil War began. All of them would be emancipated after the South lost the war. Well, those who had been on board the Clotilda would tell their stories, but so few were willing to listen and believe the horror they endured. As time passed, the Clotilda became a myth of sorts. No one was able to return home because they had no means to earn money needed to make the journey home to Africa. Unable to return, many of those who had been on board the Clotilda decided they would bring Africa to America. In 1866, 32 Africans who remained on Timothy Mayer's land created a home where they had once been held captive. After emancipation, they worked in mills, on farms, and sold vegetables to make enough money to buy land for Mayer. They built a little Africa in Alabama, calling their settlement near Mobile, Africa Town. Africa Town was the first town founded, occupied, and completely controlled by people of color in the United States. The group formed their society as if it was home in Africa. They appointed a chief, spoke their language, established a judicial system based on their own laws, and built the first school in the area. By 1868, all the residents of Africa Town became U.S. citizens, but they still longed to return home, and they tried to. They requested help from Timothy Mayer, but were refused. They requested repatriation from the government, but the request was denied. They would remain in Africa Town. Survival was hard. Men would hunt for food. Women used their agricultural skills to raise crops and sell them. As the years passed, men would take jobs in local mills, earning about a dollar a day. More and more residents of the Africa Town settlement used the money they earned to buy land to expand Africa Town. In the decades following the establishment of the settlement, many members of the press would travel to Africa Town to interview a few residents who were willing to talk. When an interview was granted, they requested that their tribal name be printed in the paper. They held on to hope that their families back home were looking for them, might read of them, and know they were safe. Two of the most recognizable figures who visited Africa Town were Alabama native and author Zora Neale Hurston and Tuskegee Institute founder Booker T. Washington. They came to meet the residents and hear the firsthand accounts of the men and women of the Clotilda. In 1927, Zora Neale Hurston traveled through the Deep South, collecting folktales from African Americans. Her journey included time in Africa Town, where she met and interviewed the man believed to be the last surviving captive of the Clotilda. Oluwole Kozola was his given name, but his descendants here in America call him Cujo Lewis. For 3 months, Hurston shared meals with Lewis, cleaned his church with him, joined in conversations with his friends. She earned his trust, and over the course of their time together, she asked about his life. And sometimes he would tell her she asked too many questions. Sometimes he would share a part of the story of his life with her. Hurston's interviews led to Lewis sharing about his daily life in his home village in Africa, what he faced the day he was captured, and more details about the journey from Africa to Alabama. She tried to publish a book about him in the early 1930s, but publishers pushed back after it was revealed that Hurston had plagiarized work from another Alabama writer in an article she wrote about the life of Cujo Lewis. Hurston's book, Barrakhan, The Story of the Last Black Cargo, was published, but not until 2018. Lewis shared with Hurston that he was born in what's now known as the West African country of Benin. He was 19 when he and members of a neighboring tribe were captured and taken to the coast, where they were sold into slavery and forced onto the Clotilda. Lewis explained that he and his fellow captives were sorry to be parted from one another when they arrived in Alabama. They had suffered unimaginable trauma and horror as the Clotilda sailed to America. Their grief was heavy to have been removed from their homeland, But to be separated after enduring such pain only made that heartache worse. In those first years, as an enslaved African man in America, Lewis said he would fall asleep. He would dream of his mother back home in Africa and feel as though he might die in his sleep because his longing for home broke his heart. Lewis worked on a plantation with fellow slaves, none of whom spoke his language. No one could explain to him what was going on, where he was, if he would ever go home again. None of his fellow slaves could tell him because they had no way to communicate with him. It would take years for him to begin to learn the language and fully communicate. The Civil War had started soon after he arrived in America, and in 1865, it would be a group of Union soldiers who would deliver the news to Lewis and many of the enslaved people he was working alongside that they were going to be free. Cujo Lewis died in 1935 at the age of 95. For years, he was believed to be the last survivor of the Clotilda. That was until a scholar from Newcastle University identified Sally Smith, who had lived until 1937. Sally Smith was the name given to Radoshi, who was 12 years old when she was kidnapped from her West African village and chained inside the Clotilda. When she arrived in America, slave traders forced her to marry one of her fellow captives, an adult man from another African village who did not speak her language. Radoshi and her husband were sold to Washington Smith, the founder of Alabama's Bank of Selma. She worked in the house and fields of Washington Smith's plantation for 5 years. On June 19, 1865, the day known as Juneteenth, 17-year-old Radoshi, Sally Smith, her husband, and her daughter were free. But as was true for the majority of those who had been enslaved and then emancipated, they had few options. She and her husband had no access to earning income to make the journey home to West Africa. They remained on the plantation, remained on the land after they were freed. Decades later, Sally Smith and a few of those who had been enslaved with her ended up owning about 6,000 acres on that plantation. She lived out the remainder of her life on that land, dying there in 1937. Cujo Lewis chose a different path when he learned that the United States government would do nothing to help him or any of those men, women, and children who had been kidnapped and forced into slavery. He admitted that he was angry. He had been stolen away from his homeland. But that anger turned to resolve and hope when he and 31 fellow free people of color saved the money to buy the land that would become Africatown, where Lewis would remain for the rest of his life. The Clotilda and its captives remain shrouded in mystery and lore for over 150 years. It was a reporter from Alabama who helped reawaken the hunt for the Clotilda and has helped bring the focus back to where it should be, Africatown. There have been many attempts to find the Clotilda. In January of 2018, Ben Raines, an environmentalist and former reporter for AL.com, found a shipwreck, and with it, the hope that the Clotilda had been found. The state brought in maritime archaeologists and a team to investigate the site, but they found that the ship beneath the waters was just too big to be the Clotilda. Some people face a setback and find it hard to move forward. Not Ben Raines. Here's Ben Raines speaking with Mobile's NBC 15.
But when the big group came down of all the archaeologists in March of 2018 and said, no, this isn't it, you're wrong, they left. And then nobody was looking for Clotilda, so I decided to keep looking.
Ben Raines' determination and his ongoing search for the Clotilda led him to connect with researchers from the University of Southern Mississippi, who agreed to work on the project, mapping the contours of the riverbed to detect any submerged objects. Their survey revealed the presence of a wooden wreck bearing the signatures of a 19th century vessel. Here's Ben explaining what happened next.
And we went out there a week later and actually dove on them and checked them out. One of them was made of wood and seemed to be about the right size. I pulled a piece of it up out of the water. It was clearly from the 1850s. It had square nails, wrought iron nails, handmade nails. So I said to everybody, I was like, guys, we just found a ship from the 1850s.
Imagine you're in the murky waters of the Mobile River and you retrieve a piece of wood from a dive that could be one of the most historically significant shipwrecks in U.S. history. Then imagine what it had to feel like being the guy who thought he had found the Clotilda, only to learn just weeks before that you were wrong. Ben Raines wanted to make sure. He contacted the state of Alabama, gave them the coordinates of the wreckage site, all the information he had, and then he waited. The Alabama Historical Commission supported an ongoing effort to find the Clotilda. They partnered with maritime archaeologist James Delgado, the National Geographic Society, the Smithsonian, and the Slave Wrecks Project for a full-scale assessment of the section Ben Raines directed them to in the Mobile River. This time, Ben Raines was right. That piece of wood he had held in his hands, it was indeed a piece of history. Last month, the Alabama Historical Commission met with Africatown families and descendants to deliver the news. The wrecked ship off the Gulf Coast is the Clotilda. Everyone in the room that day was overjoyed that the site had been found. They listened as the commission and investigators explained how they concluded that this time it really was the Clotilda. Ship records and detailed accounts from Captain Foster's own historical narrative of the Clotilda mission led to the ship being identified. When maritime archaeologists and divers reached the wreckage site, there was no bell, nothing with a name identifying the sunken ship. The wreckage site is adjacent to property that the Mayer family owned at the time the Clotilda made its illegal voyage. The size and shape of the wreckage site is also key. The Clotilda wasn't a typical vessel. It was custom built for local conditions along the Gulf and for deep water voyages for trade. It was built and licensed in Mobile in 1855. The ship was 86 feet long by 23 feet wide, with a ship's frame made of oak and its planks of southern yellow pine. The Clotilda had a copper hull and was designed to carry 120 tons of cargo. To put things in perspective, as far as the size of this ship, most of the Gulf-built schooners of this era were built to carry 40 to 60 tons of cargo. Samples of wood recovered from the second wreckage site Ben Raines directed the state of Alabama to in 2018 showed that the wood was white oak and southern yellow pine from the Gulf Coast. Fasteners from its hull were iron, the same kind of iron known to be used in the construction of the Clotilda. And remember, the Clotilda had been burned. Researchers looked for evidence of that when they investigated the wreckage site, and that is exactly what they found. Evidence that the remains of the ship stuck in the bottom of the murky and muddy Alabama waters near 12 Mile Island were burned. The physical and forensic evidence were so powerful that when independent reviews were carried out by international authorities, they all agreed, this is the Clotilda. Lisa Jones, the executive director of the Alabama Historical Commission, has spoken out about the importance of the discovery, saying the voyage represented one of the darkest eras of modern history. This new discovery brings the tragedy of slavery into focus while witnessing the triumph and resilience of the human spirit. The management and protection of the Clotilda site is in the hands of the state of Alabama. The governor's office has worked with law enforcement and the State Department of Conservation to ensure the wreckage site is protected and secured. And there is still a lot to process and consider for the future of the Clotilda and the future of Africatown. It's been suggested that the Clotilda be raised, turned into a museum that could bring tourism dollars to Africatown and provide a much-needed revitalization for the community. New York Times reporter Richard Fawcett has described Africatown of 2019 as a jumble of pride and hardship and hope, of celebrating the past and wrestling with it. Africatown's peak population has been estimated at about 12,000. Today, the neighborhood has dwindled to less than 1,800 residents. The only remaining signs of the men and women who established this community are their graves and a chimney that was part of the home of an appointed chief. When Africatown was established in 1866, and in decades after, it was a walking community. People would walk from upper to lower Africatown. That was until the state built a road right through the middle of it. A small Africatown welcome center was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina in 2005. It was never replaced due to financial issues and the struggles facing the town. The land around the community has been constantly leased to chemical plants and paper mills. The closure of mills left many Africatown residents unemployed, forced to move away to find work. More than 240 Africatown residents are also part of a lawsuit against the paper mill that closed 2 decades ago, alleging industrial pollution. The suit claims the International Paper Mill spewed ash, soot, and other cancer-causing agents for years. That case is still tied up in the courts, with the company denying any wrongdoing. Africatown's economy has been devastated and struggling for a long time. But the spirit and determination of its residents, well, that's never waned. They're proud of their ancestors, proud of their roots in a small town that's unlike any other in this country. And the town seems poised for renewal. After the BP oil spill devastated the Gulf, the company agreed to a settlement with Gulf states. Africatown's Community Development Corporation has received a grant of over $3 million from that settlement. The money is designated for a new welcome center, which will showcase the history of the area. And the Alabama Historical Commission has been holding meetings with Africatown residents, listening to their ideas of how to tell the story of the Clotilda by facing the past and moving towards healing. If it's possible to raise and restore the Clotilda, make a museum to showcase its history, well, that project would take years and cost millions of dollars. James Delgado and Ben Raines have shared that accessing the Clotilda wreckage was dangerous. Along with the alligators and water moccasins, there were the dangers of the water itself. It's fast moving, and the wreckage site is pitch black, and the wreckage itself is fragile. If raising the Clotilda is out of the question, it's been suggested that the wreckage site become a national slave ship memorial, similar to the USS Arizona Memorial in Pearl Harbor. Imagine visitors learning about the history of the Clotilda and this chapter of the slave trade near the place the last slave ship came to rest in America. Ultimately, many residents of Africatown believe the money, time, and resources it would take to fund an effort to raise the Clotilda are more than worth it, especially considering the state of Alabama undertook a massive project to save another ship in the 1960s, a battleship that's been docked in Mobile Bay since 1964, the USS Alabama. Its journey towards becoming a popular tourist site in the state was made possible by a unique fundraising campaign and school children. In 1962, the Mobile Register printed a story about South Dakota planning to scrap a few of the U.S. Navy's battleships, including the USS Alabama, which had been inactive for years. Alabamians didn't want that battleship, which was in service and used during World War II, to be lost. So they formed a battleship commission and launched a statewide campaign to fund the USS Alabama's long voyage to Mobile. The commission launched a statewide campaign to get school children actively involved in saving the USS Alabama. Children who contributed any amount, even a penny, toward bringing the ship home to Alabama would get a ticket, allowing them free admission to see the battleship when it arrived. 300,000 tickets were issued, and those children helped raise about $100,000. The commission's hard work, unique fundraising campaign, and their passion to see the USS Alabama in Mobile Bay led to over $800,000 being collected. Descendants of the Clotilda captives and residents of Africatown have pointed to the USS Alabama undertaking as an example of what the state can do when it wants to preserve history, how Alabamians have united in the past to pull off a pretty grand feat of preservation. Ben Raines, who has been credited as the first person to touch the wreckage site of the Clotilda, also believes the ship should be raised, put on display in Africatown, and should be a designated part of the Civil Rights Trail. As Raines has said, it should generate millions of dollars in tourism for a community that needs and deserves it more than anywhere else. There has been a lot of excitement around the news that the Clotilda was discovered. But what we should never lose sight of as we talk about the historical significance of the Clotilda and the discovery is the reason there is a story, the reason that ship is below the water. 110 Africans were on the Clotilda when the ship sailed from Africa. Only 109 made it to land in Alabama. We don't know her name, but we know a 16-year-old woman died during that treacherous voyage from Africa. Time will tell what happens next for the Clotilda and Africatown. The descendants of Africatown settlers and those who continue to call the town home, well, they've mastered the art of waiting and hoping. Historian Sylvie Ann Doof has written extensively about the Clotilda. The week of the announcement that it had been discovered, she spoke with the New York Times, sharing that she hopes the discovery of this ship will bring something good to the community of Africatown, noting that's the only hope because the ship itself is a ship of horror. A ship that robbed 110 captives of the lives they had known and dreams of their future in Africa. There is a poignant sign of that dream of Africa when you walk the grounds of the Plateau Cemetery in Africatown. The headstones of those souls who had been forced on the Clotilda and lived out the remainder of their lives in Africatown are buried there, facing east, facing Africa, the home and family they dreamed of and would never see again. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can learn more about the Clotilda, see photos and rare videos of the last surviving captives, Kazala and Radoshi, along with photos and videos of Ben Rain's mission to find the Clotilda in the full show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. Make sure you're following Southern Mysteries for updates on the Clotilda and Africatown. Links to follow along on Facebook and Twitter are in the show notes and on the website. Make sure you subscribe to the show in your pod player so you never miss a new episode and can catch up on previous ones. Thanks for listening.